Rise and shine with Boomer doing sports talk his way. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Boomer and Warner in the morning. Brought to you by ATB Financial, your home ice advantage. Celebrate your rink's unsung hero and nominate them for ATB's Home Ice Hero Award worth $5,000. Learn more at atb.com/home ice. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
We didn't manage the puck well tonight. We made some bad reads, made some bad decisions, and they made us pay. I thought their best players were good, but they make you pay when you don't take care of the puck. And they had a big night tonight, and we got to get back to our work ethic. I think not too many times we can say that we get our work in this room, and tonight was one of them where we just weren't good enough.
No, they weren't.
Well, I wasn't wrong.
Covered it all there. So what is it? Is it nerves? Are they drinking their own bath water? What's the story? Because the Flames were out everything for the most part last night.
I think they did okay in the fights.
Yeah, they didn't lose the fights.
Yeah, you win one, the other's a seatbelt competition.
What are they doing?
What are they punching?
Is this are they fighting?
Do they know each other, Dad? Why aren't they hitting each other?
Well, it's supposed to be a fight, son, but the one guy really, it doesn't look like he's too crazy about fighting.
Well, what? And now another fight. Brandon Bolnig has dropped the gloves with Brandon Prust. Two of the toughest middleweights in the NHL.
Two of the toughest Brandons.
Of the first period.
This is like old-time Jubilee.
Bolnig and Prust have each other tied up pretty good right now.
Twist
each other out to center ice. Bolnig trying to get his right hand free. Prust is as well. Prust landing a couple of blows. Bolnig misses with a roundhouse left. Goes down, gets back up, and they continue to battle.
Roundhouse?
I don't know.
Not like when you kick someone and you're spinning?
I'm not sure. Yeah, it was a lot of Huggy Bear out there.
It's boring. Boring, everybody.
Yeah, it was a little boring.
Quit boring, everyone.
5-1 final last night. Vancouver takes it to the Flames. Vancouver, you have to give them credit. They were ready. They were, you could see there was emotion in their game. They were young and exuberant. And they took it to the Flames.
And their old guys even looked young.
Yeah.
Top line was great. 6 points. Good thing they went and got that centerman, Brandon Sutter, who looks really good on the wing.
Yeah.
Although, to have to remind ourselves, Anson Carter once scored 30.
Yeah. I was listening, actually, I think it was Lubo talking to Sutter in the pregame. And he talked about how, with that line, two natural centers, they can take the draws on their strong side. One guy gets kicked out. You talk about puck possession. I guess when you have two natural centers out there, there's a better than average shot you're going to win that draw and have the puck.
And when you got Horvat and McCann makes the team, Absolutely you want to keep that's a good spot for Sutter to start, that for sure. If you're Verbata or you drafted him, you're pissed.
This guy.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. But that line was clicking. And you know what? The one impression I got from last night more than anything else, did it not look like every single member of that Vancouver Canucks team, coaching staff, organization, water bottle cleaner, whatever, listened all summer to everyone tell them how soft they were? Because the way they went out to the Flames was not pretty. They got manhandled. They got pushed around. They got out physicaled. They were shoulder checking going into corners. Was that not a statement game from a team that had been told all summer how soft they were?
Yeah, if not that, then it was fresh in their memory, right? What they were being called is one thing or whatever, but this was a Vancouver team that, they win last night. It doesn't exactly make amends.
No, but they were a concerted effort to say we can be physical.
They were just better. They were very good in many aspects of the game. They got 44 shots on net and multiple other, they score five. Ramo makes two crazy windmill saves that would have, so that now we're 7-1. You go beyond that, you're literally flirting with double digits in this game. If Ramo wasn't, and yeah, he wasn't spectacular, but he kind of kept it at least closer on the scoreboard than it could have been.
I'm just glad John Tortorella wasn't there. I mean, the nerve of the visiting team to start their fourth line. Oh, the call.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's right. If you missed it, we're
Jennifer,
here.
Jennifer, Jennifer.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hello, Jennifer.
We're here to take care of you.
Jennifer.
It's the, with Jack Carter. It's your Game in a Minute.
Game in a Minute, brought to you by Jack Carter Chevrolet Cadillac Buick GMC. Serving Calgary for new or pre-owned vehicles. See how easy the car buying experience can be at Jack Carter Chevrolet Cadillac Buick GMC.
It's NHL Faceoff 2015 and a rematch from last season's Stanley Cup playoffs between Bob Hartley's Flames and Willie DeJardin's Vancouver Canucks.
We got a fight! 2 seconds into the game, Derek Dorsett and Michael Ferland. Ferland hammering Dorsett with rights.
Hands it up the right side. He winds, fires, and scores.
What a slap shot by Yannick Hansen, who puts the puck just inside the near goalpost and just under the crossbar. Here comes Huther dancing in. Huther shoots and scores. On a perfect pass from Johnny Gaudreau, Yuri Hudler finds the five hole of Ryan Miller. He scores the Flames' first goal of the season and cuts the Canucks' lead to 2-1.
Plays it up the near side to Burrows, who steps in, fires it to the net, and they score. Alex Burrows simply puts the puck on net. It bounces off Dennis Wiedemann and in. It's been that kind of night for the Flames. Now Daniel, near side, Henrik shoots, and he scores. On a pass from his brother Daniel, Henrik Sedin roofs the puck. And the Canucks take a 5-1 lead. The Flames certainly did not play to their potential in their home and season opener tonight, as the Vancouver Canucks beat them convincingly by a final score of 5-1. The Canucks will also outshoot the Flames 44-30 tonight.
Game in a Minute, brought to you by Jack Carter Chevrolet Cadillac Buick GMC. Serving Calgary for new or pre-owned vehicles. See how easy the car buying experience can be at Jack Carter Chevrolet Cadillac Buick GMC.
So there you go. That is your Jack Carter Game in a Minute. 5-1 the final, as Derek had said. 44-30 the shots on goal.
44?
That's a ton.
That's a lot.
Yeah. For a team that, granted, they're not, it's not self professed, but from the outside, people, that's going to be one of the best defense corps in the league. They were not very good last night on the defensive side of the puck. I think Dougie Hamilton will be better. Took a couple penalties.
He was trying. You could see he was trying to do stuff. It just wasn't going his way.
And that's the thing, right? You try and do too much. You get outside of what you do well. I think that happened with him.
Yeah, in the first game, I get it. He had that chance in the first to blast one in. I think it just glanced off a pad or whatever, bounces out of play. And then the penalty, you know, was it wishy-washy? Was it definite? He's trying to make something happen. I guess there's a couple. He falls over in the neutral zone, doesn't get the call. Wasn't his night.
Giordano was not great. Let's go the other way. Who was great? I don't know. Ferland in spurts looked all right. He was kind of physical and going to the net.
And to squint if you really wanted to find someone you liked there.
Yeah, I mean, the top line scored a goal, so for that instance, they looked all right. But no, this was an off night for pretty much everybody. Some kind of just interesting to see some guys disappear, right? I didn't see a lot of Sam Bennett. Thought he was going to be real jacked up and ready to go. That stage in line, right? I mean, they had some opportunities here and there. They were all right at times. But this is a losing effort to try and prop up anybody that had themselves a good night last night.
Didn't really love anyone. Yeah, I would agree. And yeah. That's what they said postgame. They just owned it. That wasn't us. It's not what we do. We don't play like that. And a lot of guys had good nights. The good news is you get this team again on Saturday. This is not the one you want to not see them till Christmas. You get a chance to make amends, you know, a couple days away in Vancouver.
Who will the goalie be? Will Mason Raymond draw back in? All of that we will discuss this morning. Time for our first timeout at 6:10, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Boomer in the Morning, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Boomer and Warner in the Morning, brought to you by ATB Financial, your home ice advantage. Nominate your community's unsung hero for ATB's Home Ice Hero Award at atb.com/home ice. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Warner was right. He was right. I mean, not about all those bold predictions he made, but he said, I don't like the look of this team, the Flames, after that loss to the Winnipeg Jets in the preseason. When I watched the Jets, I saw lots of emotion, saw lots of jam. Don't see nearly as, don't see the same level from the Flames. They better be ready. And I don't know if it was that they weren't ready, were they not prepared, was it, you know, nerves? I don't know. Yes, it's one game. There's 81 more to go. You don't like that it's 2 points that you've given up to a team that you may well be fighting against for a playoff spot. But, like you said, you've got a chance to get back around on things on Saturday.
No question which the more motivated, determined group was last night. And certainly a little more incentive for the Flames to be motivated come Saturday.
Yeah. Other games from last night. We'll get into it in greater detail and need to know coming around the corner, but the Toronto Maple Leafs, they fall to Montreal at home by a score of 3-1. Pacioretty with a pair in his 400th NHL game. PK Subban, three helpers, and the first coach's challenge of the year. People were very excited about the first coach's challenge.
I thought it was going to break Twitter that the coach's challenge actually
so
happened.
So excited.
I mean, wow. Imagine, where were you when? On October the 7th, 2015, the coaches, NHL, where were you, and how did you move on after that?
It looked like Jeff Petrie had scored in the second period, but Mike Babcock challenged it on the grounds that Tomas Plekanec had interfered with goaltender Jonathan Bernier. Coaches' challenges are new to the NHL this season. They can be made on goals involving goalie interference or offside. Referees Frederic Lecuyer and Dan O'Rourke looked at the replay at the penalty box, determined that Plekanec made incidental contact with Bernier, therefore it was not a goal. Because he won the challenge, Babcock would be able to challenge another play later in the game. Huge swing there. Just a huge swing. 3-1 the final.
Could have been 4-1, boom. I mean, the coach's challenge really weighed heavily into this one.
Rangers go into Chicago and fall by a score of 3-2. A little controversy in this one as well, as a late goal by Patrick Kane waved off because the referee intended to blow the whistle.
Intent.
I don't understand this rule.
So, can I explain? Why don't you tell people what you see and why there's an issue?
To me, if you and I'm going to now blow the whistle, in the time that it takes for you to lift your hand with the whistle to your yipper, if the puck goes in, then it's a goal. Why?
See, that's not the rule, though.
What do they say? Play to the whistle, not play to when dude thinks he's going to blow the whistle.
Right, because as a player, you don't hear his intent to blow the whistle. You only hear the whistle. But what if he misses his yapper and this play should be stopped by now? I've halted. Oh, I missed the... That shouldn't count.
Then we need to get better referees.
Oh, well, we've done that for a while.
Is there another sport where this takes place? Can you imagine in the NFL? So you know what? I intended to be there and make that call, but I wasn't.
Meant to blow the whistle, sorry.
I meant to blow the whistle. Intent to blow the whistle? What are we talking about?
Apparently this is bigger news than the coach's challenge. I'm quite surprised.
Go to the replay. Was the puck in before the clock hit zero? Was it in before zero or after? Black and white. Was the puck across the line before or after the whistle went? The whistle's what stops play. Not when the ref thinks I should stop the play, so I'm going to blow the whistle.
I'm thinking about blowing my whistle. The play is over.
Stupid. Yeah, so 3-2. Rangers win that one. Controversy everywhere. And in San Jose taking on Los Angeles at the Staples Center, all Sharks. 5-1 final. Rough affair. Dustin Brown with a kind of a... Have you seen the hit in the neutral zone on Logan Couture? Kind of gets his hands up in his face, and I don't know that he jumps, but he really kind of...
So Couture hops out of the box. Low bridges, Lucic? Is that what we're calling
No, this is another one.
A different one?
Yeah.
Because so then didn't later... say Lucic. I thought then, you meant to say Lucic.
Yeah, okay. No, this is Dustin Brown. You got to check this one out. Couture involved, apparently, last night. Joe Pavelski, the new captain, a goal and two helpers. Sharks win 5-1. Like I said, we'll dig a little bit deeper. But last night, not the way the Flames wanted to start. 5-1, they fall to the Vancouver Canucks. Janssen, Sutter, Sedin, and Burrows. The Burrows, that's the tipped by the wide dog.
Yeah, he got his first of the year.
Yeah.
Don't think that counts in the pool, though.
No. The lone goal coming from Jiří Hudler, from Gaudreau and Monahan. Everything even strength last night.
It's a pretty goal. Nice little dish from Johnny.
Little shimmy. I'm going to shoot. No, I'm not. Yes, I am. No, I'm not.
Five hole.
No, I am.
Mm-hmm.
620. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Boomer in the morning. Only on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Boomer and Warner in the morning. Brought to you by ATB Financial. Your home ice advantage. Know someone whose quiet hard work makes hockey happen in your community? Nominate them for ATB's Home Ice Hero Award at atb.com/home ice. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Look at this. Joe Siddle coming up this morning. It's a game day, dude. How'd you get Joe Siddle on a game day?
It's calling in the favors.
Wow.
It's going to be a good one. 137. Have you made up your excuse? Do you need us to sign a fake doctor's note? We can do that.
What are you doing? Where are you going? That's what I need to know today. Where's everybody? What are we doing?
I'm on 17th Avenue. There'll be pints.
I'm sleeping, but... When I say we, I mean like everyone listening and us, everybody.
But you've got that taping, like you can.
I can record it. Yeah.
Yeah. PVR.
Yeah.
VHS.
Yeah. I'll just throw in a tape, and I'll have to put it on the the extended play to make sure I get the whole game in.
Well, the picture won't be as good.
Because if I go SP standard play, it'll probably run out on me. What are you doing?
Well,
today?
If it goes over into.
I know. Then I'll never know. I'll never know.
What am I doing?
Yeah.
Someone
is
somewhere,
this a big enough deal that you make plans?
Someone somewhere is stupid enough to have planned some sort of meeting at 2 o'clock, so I have to break the news that ain't happening.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm not sure where. Got a lot of invitation, a lot of friends.
Rocket tried to book me for a meeting at 11 on Friday. We could get hit. No, that's game. Sorry.
This came out yesterday from the big boy. Guy Lawrence, he runs everything.
CEO, Rogers.
We're proud of our Blue Jays, they're Canada's team. The games aren't at the most convenient times. We know everyone wants to watch. For tomorrow's game, it's towards the end of the day. Clearly.
Eastern time.
In East, it is. So we assume you can alter your schedule accordingly. On Friday, we're giving all corporate office employees and non-critical, non-customer-facing staff the afternoon off as of noon Eastern.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thanks, Guy.
That is how you do it.
Yeah.
That's how you do it.
So that's everything Rogers.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Well, tomorrow at noon.
Tomorrow Eastern. At noon, you can leave for the rest of the day.
No, to make up because it's different.
It's not how it works.
The game is not on while you're working.
But I came in early today.
Yeah.
And this is from our bigwig. The customer face front desk will be open normal office hours, prize pickups, everything. I know it's going into a long weekend. Many will be able. For those people that can't leave, we will be bringing in some treats and cranking the TVs to Sportsnet. And you can stream it at sportsnet.ca.
On your phone, folks, you can do that too.
So you have to be here, but you don't have to work.
Providing you are able to complete your work and the department is able to handle the stress, feel free to head out to watch the game at 1:30 today and take all day Friday.
Department stress.
Holy, jumped up.
What do we get?
We get nothing, which is okay. I don't mind.
We get lots. We're good.
If I had to choose between working that schedule and doing that job and getting, hey, we get one Friday every 20 years off to watch a Blue Jay playoff game or do this, I think I know what I'll pick. Okay, you're here because you don't do anything during Lack and Fora. So you called it, basically. That mess that took place at the Dome last night.
Did you call this?
You called it.
Kinda. I called it.
After the Winnipeg game,
they're not trying.
This is not last year's club. Where are the work boots?
Well, disrespectful Johnny Gaudreau and his straight brim backwards baseball cap should maybe get off the high horse a little bit and show up and work.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? Would that be okay? Anyone against that?
I think there's probably.
Does anyone remember Johnny last year in training camp? zipping around, impressing people.
There's about 19 guys that could have been better last night. 12 forwards, 6 defenders.
So now it's Bolig's fault. Bolig can't do anything to help us win, but when we don't play well, it's Bolig's fault.
Hmm?
Is that?
What he's saying is you're on the Gaudreau fan club, and we know that, of course, you hate Brandon Bolig.
I don't hate Bolig.
So to take a shot at Gaudreau is, you're right. There was more than one. I'm using him as an example. And you looked at the Winnipeg game. Their guys played hard.
Yeah. The Jets.
Yes, the Jets played hard. They were trying.
Yeah.
The effort was there. No, it was last Yeah, you don't want to get hurt. And trust me, I've been the guy not playing overly hard, but it's not a good thing.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I can look back and go, geez, I should have probably a little more. Wouldn't have hurt. So, no, they weren't ready to go. They overestimated how good they are.
And it wasn't a line. It wasn't a player. It was the group. The defense didn't look good. Bad line changes. Russell goes off at a weird time on that Sutter goal. I don't know where everybody else was on that Sutter goal. Everybody was flying to get back into the play. Tipping pucks into their own net. Just everybody. So are they buying? This was Bob Hartley's greatest fear. Don't go all summer and hear how great you are and think you're going to come in next year and just walk to a postseason berth. Now, I get that it's one game. I'm just trying to wrap my head around why it was so far away.
It's not one game. It's not one game. It's one regular season game.
Well, they can make amends Saturday, right?
And they absolutely can. And I'm not saying throw out the season's over, but you've seen zero signs of life, in my opinion.
Isn't it funny, though? They lost a fair amount of games last year, as all teams that play an 82-game schedule will. How many were that?
Flat?
Yeah. I don't know that there was more than one or two.
I think there was a game in Carolina that they blew.
Yes.
That was on that road trip.
And it was like, because they came back against Florida and won the game, and then they played in Carolina, and it was the end of a trip, and it was flat, but you had a chance to go, I forget.
No, you're right. I remember.
Anyways, that was the one game where it was like, ooh, they didn't even show up.
They could have finished 4-1 or something like that. Instead, they finished 3-2, yes. Whatever it was.
That's the one game I really can think of that maybe last year they just didn't show up.
Mm. Carolina. 44 shots against.
Ooh.
There's nothing, and in fairness, they didn't... they didn't try to. Bob Hartley afterwards, I mean, here's Giordano.
You know, it's a lesson for us. We got to learn from that game. We can't play that way to and be successful. We have no chance if we play like that. So we know that, and we'll make some changes here for next time.
So it's not a couple bounces either way. We'd be in this. I think it's pretty clear. They were the ones playing it. I think they had a front row seat to it. Not often. Now, you mentioned there's some losses last year. Not often they were outworked. They may not have won every night, but you could very rarely fault the effort. How many nights we'd say, well, you know, Giordano was good or whatever was good.
And if it wasn't the top line, it was the next line. There was always at least someone out there going, oh, you could hang your hat on. That was a good effort.
Yeah.
Mm. If you handed out letter grades last night, I don't know how many guys you'd be getting a B.
None.
Yeah.
None.
Like in the post game, it was like, absolutely well, Kulak zero. Did all right. And you're like, yeah.
Yeah,
if you have
scraping.
To go down to the lowest ice time guy on the blue line to
handle exactly.
out
and a rookie,
okay?
Which you expect zero from. So as long as he makes one pass, you're like, okay, he played well.
Yeah. Geo -3, Backlund -3. The top line didn't seem to have, like you say, that zip that we've seen them have. Just
and it's hard to recreate it. We talked about Stajan and Jones and whether they could. You going into playoffs, it should be easy to play. The emotional level so high.
Shouldn't this be an easy one too, though? It's opening night.
Should be, but they're 31.
And how easy was it for Vancouverette? Like, they were wound up. This was a statement game in their minds. You could see the way they played. It mattered more to Vancouver than it did to Calgary.
And maybe it is simple as that. Vancouver read the media too, or listened to the media. And they said, whoa, beating us down? Flames listen to the media. Oh, we should be good. Yeah, we've kind of talked about Vancouver. I wasn't blown away by them, but I don't know. They look pretty good against a flat team.
How many big saves did Ryan Miller have to make?
None.
Zero? That's the scary part if you're a Flames fan. And I don't know that it was indicative of that this team will have a tough time scoring goals. It's way too early for that stuff. They just didn't have any sort of touch within 15 feet of the net. Whether there's a pass to be made, when there was a shot, it missed the net. It didn't find tape on stick. With near the enemy net, they were sloppy. They were not sharp.
They were no good in the offensive zone. Was there any period of time where they controlled the play in the offensive zone? There were shifts where the Sedins, which they do, they're great players. They're in our zone the whole shift.
Yeah, the Sedins are healthy. It's not game 70 and they're beat up and banged up. They're fresh. They're wheeling around. Sutter's batting pucks in from waist height and
RBI singles.
Hansen's wiring pucks into the top shelf.
Come on,
Ramo. Jeez.
Come on.
There's a lot of that last night.
Well, he makes that unbelievable save early on. Yes. The place goes bananas.
And then you let a
squeaker in from the goal line. You're like, oh, you can't do that. Oh.
Great shot, but yeah.
That's
just stand there.
That's
you can't do that.
That's what he is.
Stay on your post.
Unbelievable.
Stay
saves.
On your post.
And then he'll crush you.
Wasn't the analogy last year like the hyper kid Saturday Night Live Mike Myers skit where you needed the chain to tie him to the middle of the net?
Yeah.
Oh, when he first started he was sliding out of the net far.
You know what? He still is. He just didn't last night. You wait.
Name bar. A lot of name bar on
look,
that goalie.
There's Ramo. I can see because his back is towards center ice. Anyway.
We're beating him up. 0-1. On pace to lose 82.
You know what? I don't care. There's expectations this year. It's not go out there and do your best, and anything you get, that's a bonus because no one's expecting it. No. If you're signing big free agents and you're spending tens of millions of dollars and you've got all this, and we're not going to regress. I don't care what the advanced stat people, all of this. No. You were awful. And on Saturday, if you're great, we'll come in and we'll say that you were great. Just be great. Don't be awful again. It's not unfair. We're not being unfair. Yeah, it's game one, but they stunk.
It's too early for that.
6:38, we'll come back with Jason Lacanfora.
Bold.
I got a lot of reaction on Bold.
Me too.
Because if you missed it, we had Bold predictions yesterday.
No, you yell
Bold.
Well,
you can't do that.
Bold!
There, all right. We had some bold predictions. Derek Wills.
Bold!
Wills was disappointed he missed. So he's like, you know what, I wasn't prepared. I'll be better today. I don't want to go to the bold predictions well too often. Like I say, so we might get into that. And I've got some other things. Look at me pumping you up today. You kind of predicted or at least you saw this coming, what we saw last night. And there's two other things I read yesterday. Two other things from respected people in hockey echoing things that you've brought up in the last week to 10 days.
Huh?
On point, Rhett Warner. We'll give you those details coming up. But Jason Lacanfora tonight, it is the Colts and Texans. We'll have it for you on the radio. Will Andrew Luck take to the field? We'll find out. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Rhett Warner, liar.
Sportsnet 960 mornings with Boomer in the Morning on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Streaming live at sportsnet.ca/960.
Warner in the Morning, brought to you by ATB Financial, your home ice advantage. Celebrate your rink's unsung hero and nominate them for ATB's Home Ice Hero Award worth $5,000. Learn more at atb.com/home ice. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
We always tell you how great October is in the world of sports. You're going to get a nice kind of an example of it today. Flames opened their season last night, the home opener. Today we get into that a little bit. 5-1 loss. What about playoff baseball? That's how you get to October. That's when it's great. We've got the Rangers and Jays game one this afternoon at 1:30. And then Thursday night football tonight, Colts and Texans. We got that one at 6. How don't you love that? Well, we get you set for week 5 with our insider.
Sportsnet 960's NFL insider Jason Lacanfora is brought to you by Shanks. Thursday night football tonight at Shanks North and Shanks South as the Houston Texans take on the visiting Indianapolis Colts. Featuring 550 Bud Light Draft, Shanks Sports Grill, your NFL headquarters in Calgary.
Well, let's start right there because I was saying earlier in the show, Jason Lacanfora, that I think it was last week, you were the first guy that I stumbled across on social media that had the official expect Andrew Luck not to play today. He is out. What are your sources telling you about Luck today? Because it is game day and there seems to be nothing definitive.
Yeah, it's still very early, obviously, in the day. And they'll have him over to the stadium and work him out probably 3 hours or so before the game, and we'll get definitive word then. We may hear a little bit more before that. They did re-sign Josh Johnson as a backup emergency quarterback, but that was also because Hasselbeck's been sick, and actually Hasselbeck did less at practice yesterday than Andrew Luck, I'm told. You know, Luck's thrown a little bit more each day. Their hope Sunday when they decided not to dress Andrew was that they would have him for Thursday, although there was no guarantees. And, you know, I was told things are still trending in that direction. But we'll have to see. You know, this is the franchise. If he wakes up this morning and that shoulder is locked up, or, you know, the range of motion is getting more limited, or there's, you know, something going on there, then they're going to err on the side of caution. So we'll have to wait and see. I think he's going to play based on what I've heard to this point, but we just, you know, it's still inconclusive. It's going to come down to what's going on when he gets to the stadium today.
And on the other side, have they installed Hoyer back in as the starter? What's going on there? It's hard to keep track.
With Mallett, I don't know why, other than it almost seems like hubris on the part of Bill O'Brien, the head coach, who, you know, yanked Hoyer two and a half quarters into the season. And then Mallett played really well in garbage time, so then he stuck with Mallett. But Mallett's been a failure. The offense has been a failure, particularly in the first half of games. The only thing that they have done on offense the last few weeks is once they've fallen behind in games. So then he brings in Hoyer last week. Hoyer does awesome in garbage time, not that it matters. You know, gets it from 42-0 almost to 42-28. And now he says he's sticking with Mallett because it's a short week, which is a little disingenuous because Hoyer, it's not like Hoyer hasn't had reps in the system. Hoyer was in this system in New England with Bill O'Brien, and Hoyer got the bulk of the reps in the preseason, and Hoyer obviously started week one. So I don't know what's going on there, but nothing good, that's for sure.
Jason, you were bullish on the Texans here.
Yeah, I thought they had some talent. The two teams that I really swung and missed on, and I kind of bought the hype train on both, were Houston and Miami. You know, I thought one of those two could be in the playoffs in the AFC as a wild card, and they're not going to get close. And Houston's schedule, I mean, they play a joke schedule. They don't play anybody, but they can't beat anybody. So what's the difference? You know, what does it matter? You know, they really should not have a win. The one game they won against Tampa, Tampa's kicker missed 3 field goals and an extra point in the second half of that game. And it was a one-score game pretty much most of the day. So they've shown me nothing. And defensively, it's amazing. If it wasn't for Chip Kelly and Joe Philbin and, you know, Sean Payton and some of these guys catching a lot of heat, you'd hear a whole lot more about Bill O'Brien and what's going on there, because it's nothing good.
Yeah. I mean, well,
you know, it's not J.J. Watt. You're not going to hear any MVP talk for J.J. Watt this year. You know, he's not making quite as many splash plays. They never have a lead, so they can't tee off on other people. It's been a disaster.
And in fairness, you weren't alone. There were a lot of people that felt this was going to be a big year for the Miami Dolphins. They've now already fired Joe Philbin, as you mentioned. And I love reading the stuff that's happening. Could it get any worse, right? More and more controversy. What was Ryan Tannehill got into it with a practice roster player, said, hey, enjoy your practice roster trophy, and started ripping one of his own teammates. He's kind of tried to soften that. But it's this this isn't getting better in Miami, is it?
No, no. Look, there's been the inmates run the asylum there. You know, look, Miami's been a place for a while now where, you know, the owner's not in the building. He's in New York. He doesn't really come down hard on anybody. Any given day, depending on which way the wind blows, you know, it could be the business side of the operation who's really in charge that day. Maybe it's football operations. Some days nobody really knows. You've got a coach who's a bit of a pushover, a nice guy, but nice to a fault. And you've got an absentee owner who's loyal to a fault to that really nice guy head coach. And there's no authority figure around anywhere. So they you go there for the money and you go there for South Beach. And if you go 8-8, everybody's kind of like okay with that. And, you know, it's a very comfortable environment. And now they got, you know, I don't know if you saw any of Dan Campbell's press conference. He's clearly trying to rail against that. But it's tough when you're a tight ends coach who was a coaching intern 3 or 4 years ago. You know, I'm supposed to believe now that Dan Campbell, because of some Oklahoma drills, is going to get Ndamukong Suh to play up to his contract. I don't think it works that way. But you know, we're going to find out. But, yeah, it's a total disaster there. You know, and I thought there would be a buy-in, and I thought that guys would rally. And, you know, I thought that because the way the schedule's set up – that's another one. They don't play any. The amazing thing about their start is they haven't played a quarterback yet. You know, like they lost to Blake Bortles. They lost to Fitzpatrick. They should have lost to Cousins week one. I mean, they haven't really played anybody yet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Tyrod Taylor on the road, they got Tyrod Taylor at home and the Bills utterly controlled that game from the first snap to the last. So, I mean, it's been a disaster. I thought that they could, I thought they'd be a team that got better through the year and that could start quickly because they didn't play any quarterbacks early. And I thought they'd have one of the better D-lines in the game. I mean, they've got one sack collectively. That's inexcusable through a quarter of the season for any team, much less one that's got Olivier Vernon and Earl Mitchell and Ndamukong Suh and Cameron Wake on their D-line.
Another team that's disappointed in Kansas City. And I understand they're missing a lot of guys in the secondary, but this was supposed to be a ferocious pass rush and a team that made the playoffs a couple times recently, a solid run game. What's happened to them?
You know, they still cannot get the ball downfield at all. I mean, yeah, they finally got a wide receiver touchdown, but, you know, Alex Smith has kind of hit the wall. He is who he is, and he'll be a bridge quarterback, and he'll get you from, you know, really rocky terrain to solid terrain, but he's not going to keep getting you up that mountain. He's not going to keep elevating your team. And once the expectations aren't, it's not good enough just to kind of win 9-10 games and squeak into the playoffs. When you've kind of done that once or twice, it's very difficult then to make that next leap with him. And they've got fundamental problems as well. They have the same problems really as Miami. Neither team can get the ball downfield. Neither team has a quarterback who really wants to get the ball downfield. They're not explosive at all. The hope is that you dink it off to Jarvis Landry in Miami or to Jamal Charles in Kansas City for 5-6 yards, and you hope he runs it for another 30. You don't have to defend the deep game against them. Neither team can stop the run. Now, they got these edge rushers, but if you can't stop the run and the other team's not throwing that often against you and you can't run the ball and you can't stop the run, so you don't ever have yourself in a situation where you're getting a lot of sacks because you're chasing the game and you're throwing more than you want to. It's just the whole formula there is warped. And I don't know, chicken or the egg. What do you have to start running the ball first? Do you have to start stopping the run first? Do you have to just, you know, I don't know what it is. But when Tom Bahali and Justin Houston are playing the run 65% of the time, 70% of the time, they're not going to get by default, they're not going to be attacking the other team's quarterback. They're not going to be making as many game-changing plays. The sample size won't be as big. But the equation there is warped. And really, both teams are completely undermined by a lack of any semblance of decent offensive line play. And that's suffocating their seasons.
Jason Lacanfora is our NFL insider here on Boomer and Warner in the Morning. The Seattle Seahawks, we know they're going to win their home games. They almost lost it, maybe should have lost it. No Marshawn Lynch. The O-line is in somewhat tatters. Yeah. Their quarterback is running for his life. This weekend they're at Cincy, who's been very good. What are we seeing with Seattle? Is this just the rough start, now Chancellor's back, or is there greater warts on this thing?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot like last year. They can't find their offensive identity. the offensive line is worse than a year ago. And there's a lot of experimentation going on there with some converted defensive linemen. There could be a change at center coming for them, if not before this game, then certainly during it, if the snaps and the exchanges aren't better. It's bad enough. They don't have a lot of individual offensive talent on the offensive line. But when your quarterback is already losing a quarter of a second, a half a second, three quarters of a second from having to adjust to a bad snap all the time, that's a luxury they really can't afford, given, you know, how bad that unit is already to begin with. You know, Lynch could play this weekend. We'll have to see how that goes. But, defensively, they're back to being who they are, and that's where it all starts with them. I do think they'll be able to run the ball as the year goes on, and really we've seen at times Marshawn be Marshawn. We've seen this kid Rawls have himself a game, and I thought Fred Jackson was on his way to a big game last week before his leg got rolled up on. So, you know, I don't think it's dire. They went through transition last year when they couldn't figure out how to use Percy Harvin. They're kind of doing that right now with Jimmy Graham. But I think the real lesson there is going to be, as long as Daryl Bevel, their coordinator, is calling that offense, you know, the defense will lead them. And they're not going to get all that cute. And they're not going to scheme all that hard to get one guy the ball in fortuitous situations the way, like if you look at an Atlanta with Julio Jones and the way Kelce, you watch them at all, Kyle Shanahan, their coordinator, he'll move Julio Jones on every snap. He'll be in the slot on the left, slot on the right, out wide on the left, out wide on the right, as a back in the eye formation, with trips on one side, isolated on the other side. That's not really what they're going to do for Jimmy Graham, because their bread and butter at the end of the day is just going to be running the football and hoping that guy can make a play here or there. He's not going to be force-fed the ball. I just don't see that happening, given the way that offense operates, and frankly, given the way that offensive line's so bad, a lot of times it's going to be what can Russell do to keep the play going. So I don't think there's going to be a lot of style points. I think it might be a little bit herky-jerky for a while, but I think they're a good football team. We know they're a good football team, and I think they have the kind of secondary that can go into Cincinnati and handle them. I think this is a team they're built to play. As great as the Bengals have looked on offense and as great as the Bengals have been at home, I think the Seahawks have a little chance to make a statement here.
I'm totally with you on Seattle. They don't seem interested in trying to get the ball to Jimmy Graham. Why did they make that trade? I mean, their offensive line is notably worse without Max Unger. Yeah. Now you have a guy that has been a Pro Bowler, and you can't get the ball to him beyond 10 yards down the field. I mean, this is a crazy trade, given what you said. Their coordinator doesn't really have any interest in doing anything sexy offensively.
Well, I think you could say from the other side, why did New Orleans do it as well? Because the center's not doing a whole heck of a lot for them, because they can't really run the ball. They have that offense used to flow, had someone to flow through. Now it doesn't. They haven't been nearly the same without Jimmy Graham. I mean, really, I think if you gave those guys truth serum, both those GMs, John Schneider and Mickey Loomis, would undo that trade now, even just this small period of time into it. I mean, I get why Seattle did it, because the thought was, well, if we have what we have, and now we've got this guy to just catch jump balls in the red zone, and just we finally have a freak of nature. Everybody talks about Russell Wilson's size. Well, you can't miss Jimmy Graham, you know, and just throw it up to him. And, you know, but that's not really who Russell ultimately is. He's going to try to protect the football. Not that he's obviously a playmaker, but, you know, it's going to take some time, and it's a big adjustment. And maybe it does work. Maybe it does flourish down the road. We don't know. But the problem, too, is they really want to run the ball a lot, obviously. And they want to run the ball out of one tight end sets and two tight end sets. But Jimmy Graham's not a tight end. He's a wide receiver. So as an inline blocker, it's not going to happen. It's just not who he is. And other teams know if he's on the field in an obvious obvious running situation, and you're attacking that play in the run game, your assumption is they're running away from Jimmy Graham. They're not going to run behind Jimmy Graham. The Saints never ran behind Jimmy Graham in New Orleans. So you've got a weak offensive line, the need now to bring extra people in to help the run game, but the one tight end who you want on the field 100% of the time isn't really a tight end. So, you know, are we going to use two blocking tight ends and then put Jimmy out wide as sort of isolate him? I mean, they can. I mean, and maybe that's the answer. But now you're taking other people off the field. You know, so now there's no Doug Baldwin in that situation. It's just the personnel packages get a little limited when the tight end's not really a tight end, and you are this sort of team that so desperately needs to run the football.
We got about a minute, Jason. I know that the fall meetings took place, Roger Goodell speaking, San Diego, Oakland, St. Louis, all looking at potential moves to L.A. Are we closer to a solution and answer here?
Well, we should be, and we probably are, but I was there yesterday, talked to a lot of people. No one knows what the equation is. No one knows whether it's Carson, California, or Inglewood, California. No one knows whether it's one team or two teams and how they'd be paired. They just know that they want to get this resolved. And there's three owners who badly want to leave their home markets right now and, if left to their own devices, would have already done so. So there's going to be a whole lot of back-channel work, backdoor sort of meetings and caucusing and figuring out which owners are in which camp. And a lot of that's already going on, but it really needs to ramp up now. By December, I would say the league's going to have to come out and say which one of these projects it prefers. And in January, the expectation is there'll be a vote. And trust me, if there's a vote, there'll be a move, because there's no way in hell that this league is going to, you know, bring all these owners in, have all the media sitting out there, bring it to a vote, and then come back out 5 hours later and say, boy, yeah, we couldn't get 24 votes for either, you know, for anything, so we're just going to stick as, you know, status quo for another year. That's not how these things happen. If it comes to a vote, it's because all the internal caucusing already lets them know, yeah, we've got enough. This, you know, it's time to do this.
A couple words or less, is it one or two teams that makes more sense in L.A.?
Ultimately, two. The question is it two right away, or is one coming first and then the other one a couple years later?
Great stuff, man. Good to talk to you. We'll do it again on Monday. Enjoy the weekend.
Sounds good, guys. Enjoy the game.
You bet. Jason Lackenfor, our NFL insider. Yeah. St. Louis, Oakland, San Diego. Not really hard to envision any of those cities without NFL football.
Well, Oakland's, you've already seen them move back and forth between L.A. and,
yeah.
I mean, the Raiders have done that a bunch. St. Louis's owner already owns land in L.A., and that would be the one team move. And how about the Raiders and Chargers? Divisional rivals. Like, these are the teams that, one of the greater rivalries in the league where people get stabbed at games. Imagine if they were sharing the same stadium. That's what's on the table here.
And now San Diego, they don't share with the Padres, right?
They're
separate
they used
venues.
To. The Padres got Petco, what, 10 years
yeah.
ago?
So
used to be Jack Murphy or Qualcomm.
So what do you do with Qualcomm?
Oh, it's a dump. It's, yeah. It's gone. And you know what? California's broke, man. You can't keep going out. The government's asking for money for stadiums. They just don't have any more there. It's been there. Won't do it again. It's kind of what governments are saying around California.
Mm-hmm. We're going to break. We got Warner here.
It's a good segment.
He, it really was.
You need to catch your breath after that dominant 620 to 640 spell you had.
Flames lose last night by a score of 5-1. We have thoughts. We have plenty of them. We'll share some of them next. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.